Hey, Prime members, you can binge 8 new episodes of the Mr. Ballin podcast 1 month early and all episodes ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Today's podcast will feature 3 stories that all involve terrifying encounters in the wild. The audio from all 3 of these stories has been pulled from our main YouTube channel and has been remastered for today's episode. The links to the original YouTube videos are in the description. The first story you'll hear is called A Walk in the Woods, and it's about 2 women who head into a forest to walk around and try to collect some sap, but little did they know, they were being watched by a monster. The second story you'll hear is called Grizzly Man, and it's about a bear expert that takes too big of a risk. And the third and final story you'll hear is called Exposure, and it's the story of a man and his quest to get the perfect photo, and he would eventually get it, but it would cost him dearly. But before we get into today's stories, if you're a fan of the strange, dark, and mysterious delivered in story format, then you've come to the right podcast because that's all we do, and we upload twice a week, once on Monday and once on Thursday. So if that's of interest to you, please offer to buy the Amazon Music Follow button a brand new set of AirPods, but just give them regular earbuds with the cords cut off. Okay, let's get into our first story called A Walk in the Woods.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings, or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
On the afternoon of May 11th, 2015, 55-year-old Natalia was gathering sap inside of a Russian forest with her 82-year-old friend, Valia. The two of them had been coming to this grove of birch trees for many years. They enjoyed the peace and solitude of nature, and it was also a good place for Natalia to bring her little dog so he could run around while they collected the sap. It was a perfect spring day. The weather was very mild, the sun was out, and the two friends had a great time just kind of moving around to the different birch trees, using their little drills and hammers to get their taps into the tree, and then they'd put their glass bottles underneath each tap to collect their harvest. And then at some point, Natalia felt like she had all the sap she would need, and she began gathering up her things to get ready to leave. And as she did that, she looked over at Valia, and she had found this really big birch tree, and she had sat down underneath it and was working hard to set her tap. And so as Natalia registered that Valia was over here, kind of doing one more tree before they left, she began looking around for her dog. And she found her dog, and he wasn't too far away from Valia, and he was just kind of moseying around one of the trees, when suddenly Natalia noticed the dog came to a hard stop, and it turned and looked deeper into the forest, like it had clearly registered something that had put it on alert that was out of view. And so Natalia, her view was obscured from whatever the dog was looking at, and so she put down her equipment and kind of moved between the trees to see what her dog was looking at. And at some point, her view cleared, and she saw pretty far off in the forest was something huge, this dark thing kind of moving behind the trees. And suddenly, it jumped out from behind the trees and ran towards the dog. It was a huge Russian brown bear. And so, totally horrified, Natalia's watching this bear charge her dog. She looks over, she sees Valia, who's pretty hard of hearing, is sitting with her back to this bear and the dog, still just working on this tree. And Natalia's just frozen for a moment, having no idea what to do. And then instinct suddenly took over, and Natalia just turned and began running away, leaving Valia and leaving the dog. But after only running several paces, she stopped and turned around and saw the bear is still trying to attack the dog, but the dog is standing its ground and barking at the bear, which is kind of causing it to back up and be a little unsure of itself, even though this dog is so much smaller. And still Valia is not reacting at all. She has not heard the bear, the dog, nothing. And Natalia, she's looking back, knowing that she needs to do something. She can't just let her friend and her dog get killed. And so Natalia began walking slowly back in the direction of this bear, and she began screaming at Valia to get up and run with her. But the second Natalia began screaming, the bear went from looking at the dog to turning and looking at Natalia, and suddenly it was like the dog meant nothing. The bear had decided it was going to go after Natalia. And so Natalia, she's staring at this bear, realizing, oh my God, it's going to charge me. But before she could even turn to run, the bear had ran at full speed and jumped at her. Natalia turned and she tried to run, but the bear bit down on her thigh and she felt it crush her leg and pull her to the ground and whip her up against a nearby birch tree. And she's screaming and trying to pull herself away, but the bear is ripping at her leg, trying to yank her back into the forest. And then Natalia, she sees her little drill that she uses to set the tap in the trees, and she reaches out and she grabs it, and she turns, and her leg is being actively eaten by this bear. And she turns on the drill, and she's about to jam it into the bear's eye, when the bear suddenly stands up to its full height, and then just falls all its weight down onto Natalia's chest. And immediately, Natalia dropped the drill, and the bear clenched down on her throat. Now, at this point, Valia, who again is hard of hearing, she didn't know what was going on, she turned around and saw this bear mauling her friend. And so what does she do? She runs over to this bear right behind it and begins pummeling this bear and screaming at it to get off her friend. And the bear, who barely registers Valia hitting it, it just lets go of Natalia for a second. It turns around, and you got to remember, this bear has been eating Natalia. Its face is covered in her blood, and it turns and looks at Valia, and Valia, she's terrified, she begins stumbling backwards, and the bear is clearly about to jump on Valia, when Natalia, who's barely alive, she sees this happening, and she just begins screaming at this bear while she's laying there bleeding out, trying to attract the bear to come back and keep eating her to spare Valia. And it works. The bear, hearing Natalia screaming behind it, forgets about Valia and turns back around and resumes eating Natalia. And then just seconds later, the bear actually lifted up Natalia by her neck and it ran off into the woods carrying her. And so Valia is just left watching this happen. She knows she's not going to be able to stop this bear. And so she just begins running back towards the car, which was not that far from where they were. And when she got out there, she grabbed her phone and she called the authorities. About an hour and a half later, hunters sent by the police, along with animal control, arrived at this parking lot and they found Valia, who was totally in shock. And she would tell the hunters and animal control where this birch tree grove was, where all this happened. And a moment later, the authorities headed into the woods. And after arriving at the birch tree grove, they actually saw the bear. It was by itself, and it turned and looked at them, and it began charging them. And they all raised their rifles, and they fired at the bear. And they shot it enough times that the bear collapsed right in front of them, and then they shot it one more time to make sure the bear was dead. But there was no sign of Natalia anywhere. But then suddenly, the authorities turned and saw something move off in the distance, and out from behind a tree came Natalia's little dog. It had somehow not sustained any injuries from this bear, even though the bear had originally gone after the dog. And the dog, it came up to the authorities and then quickly doubled back behind a tree. And so, kind of operating on instinct, the group followed the dog around the tree, and they saw the dog was closely guarding this kind of mound that was covered in sticks and leaves and dirt. And so one of the hunters walked over and looked down, and they realized there was a person underneath this mound. it was Natalia. They pulled off all of the dirt and the twigs, and they found her absolutely destroyed, mauled body. But Natalia was actually still alive. Brown bears are notorious for eating their prey while they are still alive. And in many cases, they will gravely wound their prey, but not let it die, because then the meat is fresher when they come back and eat it later. And so bears will wound their prey and then basically bury them, cover them up with sticks and dirt, kind of like putting it in the fridge, and then come back and eat them later on. And so Natalia was earmarked to be eaten later because she was still alive and buried. Natalia was rushed out of the forest to a nearby hospital, and she would stay there for several weeks because she had serious, serious injuries from this bear. All over her body were these huge bite marks, and a lot of the flesh from her leg had been pulled off. But amazingly, she would recover, although the trauma of merely being eaten by a bear has never left her.
Our next story is called Grizzly Man.
Known as the Grizzly Man, Timothy Treadwell was, above all else, a huge bear enthusiast. His passion for these creatures led to a passion for environmentalism and for documentary filmmaking, the subject of which were the grizzly bears of Katmai National Park in Alaska. And so starting in the late 1980s, Treadwell began going to Katmai National Park and setting up a camp there for the whole summer and filming all of his interactions with the grizzly bears. During the first half of the summer, Treadwell would stay in an area that he referred to as the Grizzly Sanctuary. It was this area near Hallow Bay. It was this big, open, green field. And all the grizzly bears seemed to just converge on this one area and kind of mosey around and be lazy. They were not aggressive at all towards Treadwell, and so he could walk up fairly close to them and just shoot great footage of these huge animals. During the second half of the summer, he would leave the Grizzly Sanctuary and go south to an area called Kaflia Bay. Then it was a much more densely forested area with lots of grizzly bear trails. Treadwell could use vegetation to get right up close to some of these bears without them necessarily seeing him. He referred to this area as the Grizzly Maze. Treadwell developed a fairly bad reputation amongst the park rangers of Katmai National Park because he was pretty reckless about how he interacted with these animals. I mean, they are big, wild predators, and he would get right up close and in their personal space, and every time he was just rolling the dice because eventually they thought something bad was going to happen to him. Treadwell believed he was taking every precaution and that what he was doing was safe. But Treadwell had become very emotionally connected to the grizzly bears he was seeing at Katmai National Park. He felt so comfortable with them that he would actually walk up sometimes and pet and goof around with the bear cubs. And for whatever reason, the grizzly bear parents would not harm him. And so he felt like he was kind of one of them, and they respected him and they welcomed him into their environment. Normally, whenever Treadwell went to Alaska for the summer, he would go alone. It was just him and his camera. But at the end of the summer, in October 2003, when normally Timothy would leave Alaska, because October is the time when the grizzlies become more aggressive because they're trying to eat as much food as they can before going into hibernation, Timothy decides that instead of leaving, he's going to extend his stay one more week, and he's going to fly his girlfriend, Amy Huguenard, into Alaska to spend that week with him. Friends and family did not think this was a good idea, but Timothy was like, nope, it's going to be just fine. I know these animals better than anybody else. They are not going to hurt us. So he flies Amy in and they set up camp along a grizzly trail inside of the grizzly maze. Neither of them were carrying a weapon or bear repellent spray. A week later, when the pilot returned to pick up Timothy and Amy, he looked up the hill and he could clearly see their campsite was not broken down. They had not packed it up yet. They were not down at the shoreline. So he gets out of his plane and he starts walking up the hill towards their campsite, thinking maybe they lost track of time. Maybe they don't know they're getting picked up today. And as he crests the hill, he sees there is a huge grizzly bear pacing around as if guarding its prey in the middle of this campsite. The grizzly sees the pilot and makes a move as if he's going to run towards him. The pilot turns, runs back to his plane, and flies out of there. and he calls park rangers and alerts them to this grizzly bear that's in the middle of Timothy and Amy's campsite. When the park rangers finally arrived and made their way up to the campsite, they could tell right away that Timothy and Amy were deceased. Their remains were scattered all around this campsite. It was clear that a grizzly bear, or more than one grizzly bear, had absolutely ripped them to pieces. However, this wasn't even the most horrifying part of this discovery. As the bodies were being taken away, the park rangers began bundling up their stuff to take with them, and they found, inside the tent, a camera that had a 6-minute tape on it. At first, when they hit play, they thought it was a blank tape, but it wasn't. It was just inside the tent when it was recording, and so it had no visual, but then they started hearing audio. And for 6 agonizing minutes, with a blank screen, they heard crystal clear audio of Timothy and Amy being eaten alive by a grizzly bear. The audio suggests that Treadwell had left their tent because they heard a bear outside and was attacked. And he starts screaming for Amy to come outside. The bear has Timothy's head in its jaws, and Timothy is screaming, "It's killing me, it's killing me." And Amy is screaming back, "Play dead." And at some point, it's clear that's not working. They have no way to fight the animal. And Timothy starts yelling for Amy to run away. She's paralyzed with fear. She's screaming at the top of her lungs. And then Timothy is groaning and screaming, and eventually it stops when he drags Timothy away. And then Amy doesn't try to run away. She's just kind of frozen in terror. And you hear the bear come back, and then her screams pick up, and then the tape goes quiet.
Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. It saves you time and money so you can provide your family a financial safety net starting today. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius helps you compare your options from top companies, and their team of licensed experts is on hand to help talk you through it. Easily compare quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. Your current life insurance policy you have with your employer may not offer enough protection for your family's needs. And even worse, it may not come with you if you leave that job. Policy Genius gives you unbiased advice from a team of experts. They have no incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The next and final story of today's episode is called Exposure.
Saturday, April 25th, 1987, was a beautiful spring day in the mountains of northwest Montana. It was exactly the kind of day that 40-year-old Charles Gibbs and his wife Glenda had been waiting for months. The sky was clear, the sun was bright, and the breeze was warm. And so, at around 9 a.m. that morning, Charles and Glenda had a quick breakfast inside of their house in the rural city of Libby, and then they started stuffing their backpacks full of their hiking equipment. Charles and Glenda were going to go to Glacier National Park, which is a 1-million-acre wilderness preserve with alpine meadows, forests, rivers, and lakes that are so bright and crystal blue, they almost look like they're glowing. The park is ringed by snow-covered mountains, and it's dotted with glaciers, which are huge masses of pure ice that jut up out of the rock and make you feel like you've stumbled onto some ancient frozen planet. The park is actually so otherworldly that when Hollywood producers were looking for a location to shoot the heaven scene in the big movie What Dreams May Come, they chose Glacier National Park as their location. And for Charles and Glenda, this place practically was heaven. It was the place they went all the time to go hiking, especially on beautiful sunny spring days. After packing all of their gear, Charles and Glenda made their way out the front door and began heading to their car, when as they were walking, Charles suddenly stopped short, shook his head, turned around, and ran back inside the house. When he came back out again, he was carrying his camera bag, and so he ran over to the car, he sat down in the driver's seat, and he grinned at his wife, and he held up the bag, and he said, "Now we're ready." Both Charles and Glenda worked for the public schools in Libby. Glenda was an elementary school teacher, and Charles drove a school bus. But like a lot of people who lived in Montana, their real passion was the outdoors. And for Charles specifically, his real passion was wildlife photography. He was actually a pretty accomplished amateur photographer. He'd had a couple of photo exhibits locally, and he'd gotten a few of his pictures published in the local newspaper. But what Charles really wanted to do with his photography was get one of his wildlife pictures published in a weekly publication called the Hungry Horse News. The Hungry Horse News was a tiny publication, but they had won a Pulitzer Prize, which is the highest award for American journalism. And the Hungry Horse News was famous for its nature photography. Charles had been submitting his work for years to the Hungry Horse News, but the editor kept rejecting them, telling Charles that his photos were totally beautiful, but they weren't dynamic enough. Nothing was happening in these photos. And so that morning, on the couple's drive to Glacier National Park, Charles began talking out loud to Glenda about what strategy he was going to use for his photographs during their hike. You know, what route they were going to be on and what was the best angle to take certain pictures. And as Glenda listened to Charles, she just smiled to herself because it was like, no matter how many times Charles got shot down by the Hungry Horse News, she knew he was never going to give up. And so she loved his determination and just unflappable attitude about his craft. At around 11 a.m., Charles and Glenda pulled off the highway and began heading towards the trailhead where they would start their hike that day, which was located at the base of Elk Mountain on the southern border of the park. The route they had chosen for that day was not one of the most popular at the park, and the reason for that was the trail was really steep, and in certain parts of it, it was fairly overgrown, and so really only the most hardcore hikers would go up this trail, of which there weren't that many. And so Charles and Glenda were used to being on this trail and seeing no one. But they preferred it that way. They loved being alone out in nature. Finally, they reached the gravel parking lot right at the trailhead, and Charles parked their car, and then he and Glenda hopped out, they grabbed their bags, and then began walking on this trail. The first mile of this trail brought the couple out along an abandoned road, and then over some railroad tracks, and then out into this beautiful field full of white flowers, and then the trail really started to get difficult because it basically went straight up the side of a mountain. And as they walked up this really steep part of the trail, Charles was nonstop taking pictures of everything he saw. There were deer and mountain goats, and at some point the couple reached a clearing on this steep section where they could look down and see a lake, and they saw there were beavers hard at work building a dam, and so of course Charles got a picture of that too. Now, these were the days before digital photography, and so all these pictures that Charles was taking, he couldn't actually see. He needed to go home and develop the film to see if anything he took was worth keeping. But as Charles and Glenda continued their hike up this mountain, Charles was getting more and more excited about some of the shots he was getting. He felt like they were going to be really, really good, and Hungry Horse News was going to finally accept his work. The couple made it to the summit of this trail by early afternoon, and from up there, they had this beautiful panoramic view of all these jagged mountaintops that were covered in snow, separated by these huge valleys and prairies. And Charles and Glenda were the only ones up there, and so they had this unbelievable view all to themselves. And so the couple would eat the lunch that they brought with them while sitting on this rocky outcropping, kind of looking out over this stunning view. And then when they were done, they packed up their stuff and began heading back down. because they knew they wanted to get off of this trail and out of the park before sundown. It was just about 5 p.m. when Charles and Glenda had reached the final slope of this steep section of the trail, and they were getting closer and closer to that big open field with the white flowers. And as they're going down this last section of steepness, Charles suddenly grabs Glenda and stops her and puts his fingers to his lips and then turns around and points behind him. Charles was visibly excited about whatever he was pointing at, but when Glenda looked in the direction he was pointing, she couldn't see anything, but she obviously knew that whatever he was pointing at, Charles wanted to take a picture of it. Now, Glenda, by this point, was really tired from the hiking and just wanted to go back to the car and go home. I mean, after all, Charles had taken dozens and dozens of pictures that day. Like, we don't need to get one more. And so Glenda would look at Charles impatiently, basically suggesting, like, come on, we can come back another time. But Charles didn't budge, and he looked at her like, please, I want to get one more photo. And so Glenda kind of did one of these and was like, okay. And Charles said, thank you, I'll meet you at the car. And so Glenda stood there and watched as her husband got his camera out, turned around, and began slowly making his way back up the trail. And again, Glenda's looking. She can't see what he's going to take a picture of, but she figured, you know, he had his plan. And Glenda, she turned around and began heading back down towards the car. It didn't take long for Glenda to get back to the car. She got there right around 6 p.m., and when she got there, she hopped inside, sat in the front passenger seat, turned on the radio, and then she expected to have to wait for maybe another 20 minutes or so for Charles to finish up and come join her. But Glenda, after sitting in the car, was so tired that she accidentally fell asleep. And when she woke up again, she was kind of disoriented, and immediately she looked to see if her husband was in the car with her, and he wasn't. And she's looking outside, it's getting pretty dark out. She glanced at her watch, it was 7 p.m., which means Charles had left her for at least an hour by this point. And she's thinking, there's no way Charles would have been gone for an hour. He would never do that. He would never leave me alone like that. And so Glenda began glancing around her, kind of half expecting to see Charles just outside of their car, you know, doing something. But she was all alone. There was no other hikers or cars. Charles wasn't there. And so starting to panic, Glenda got out of her car and began hustling back onto the trail to go look for Charles. And so she's yelling for Charles. She's looking around. It's getting darker and darker. And there's no sign of Charles. He's not calling back to her. It's just totally silent. So she walks along the abandoned road. She reaches the railroad tracks. She gets into that meadow with the white flowers. And still there's no sign of Charles. And she gets to the base of that steep section of the trail. And she's looking up at all these trees and how dark it was getting. And she's thinking to herself, if Charles is in trouble somewhere up there, there's no way I can help him by myself in the dark with no equipment. No one knows I'm here. I mean, this is an emergency and I need help. And so Glenda would scream a few more times for Charles. And after not hearing any response, she turned and ran all the way back to her car. She turned it on and she drove to the nearest ranger station. When she got there, she ran inside and immediately told the ranger where her and Charles had been, which trail they were on, and where roughly they were on this trail when she had gone to the car and Charles had turned around and gone uphill to take a picture of something. And as Glenda told the ranger all these details about where they were inside of the park, he really started to look worried. And when Glenda was done explaining, he told her that, yes, we need to go right now and look for your husband, but I can't have you on that trail. It's too dangerous. And so this ranger had Glenda wait at the ranger station, and the ranger, by himself, headed back to the trailhead to go looking for Charles. And so the ranger, he gets to the trailhead, he hops out, he's got a rifle and a flashlight, and he begins walking along this trail, and by now, it's dark out. And so he's looking straight ahead with his flashlight and scanning side to side. He's calling out for Charles and he's walking this trail. He gets all the way across the train tracks, through the meadow, and he gets to the steep section and he actually begins going up this part of the trail until roughly the area where Glenda had described Charles going one way and her going back down. And when he got there, there was no sign of Charles. And so the ranger just took his rifle and fired 3 shots into the air, hoping that that might get Charles, if he was in the area, to hear him and call out or do something to indicate where he had gone. But after firing his gun, the ranger heard nothing. By this point, it was approaching midnight, it was totally pitch black outside, and the ranger knew that at this point, Charles was missing, and they really needed to organize a true search party to try to find him. But they would have to do that the next morning when they had light again. And so the ranger called out a few more times for Charles, and after not hearing anything, he reluctantly turned around and made his way back to his truck and drove back to the ranger station, where he would tell Glenda that he could not find her husband and they would now have to wait for sunrise. At sunrise the next morning, 20 searchers arrived at the trailhead where Charles and Glenda had been, and these searchers had dogs, and all the dogs had Charles's scent from some clothes that was in Glenda's car. And so this big search team very slowly and methodically began moving down this trail. And so they went across the abandoned road, over the train tracks, through the meadow with the white flowers. They got to the steep section of the trail, and they got all the way up to that point where Charles and Glenda had separated, and Charles had gone uphill to do whatever he was going to do. And it was at that point on the steep section that one of the searchers' dogs picked up Charles's scent and took off running uphill. And the searcher, whose dog this was, took off running after the dog. And the dog, it went up for a little while, up the steep rocky outcropping, and then it turned and began going down again until it reached a different meadow. So not the same one they walked through with the white flowers. This was farther away to the right. And in this meadow, the dog, who still very much had the scent, began to slow down, and it went straight for this tree. It was kind of a standalone tree right at the base of this steep section. And this tree had low-hanging branches, maybe 5 feet off the ground. And the dog went right up to the tree, and then it stopped for a second. And the searcher by this point had caught up to the dog, and so he's looking at this tree. And he sees the ground looks really disturbed, and there's deep gouges in this tree. And then the dog went around this tree and sprinted another 50 feet or so, and then stopped, like it had found something. And when the searcher caught up to his dog, he looked down and he found what they feared the most. It was Charles, and he was deceased. His body was totally mangled, his arms and legs were eaten away, there were deep cuts and gouges all over his body, and there was a blood trail from Charles all the way back to this tree. Also, just a few feet from Charles's outstretched hand was a camera, Charles's camera. Now, it was obvious that something horrific had happened to Charles, and there were clear signs of a struggle that took place near this tree, and then also over here where he was found, there were clear marks on the ground that there was some sort of fight that happened right here. But interestingly, Charles was carrying a gun, but it appeared that he did not unholster it and he didn't fire it. Instead, it almost looked like whatever was happening to Charles, he refused to put his camera down, which is why it was so close to his hand when he finally died. And so it was decided that the only way to determine what happened to Charles would be to develop his camera to figure out what he was taking pictures of before he died. And so authorities would send off Charles's camera roll to be developed, and 2 weeks later, when they got it back, they couldn't believe what they saw. The photos very clearly told the story of what happened to Charles. This is what happened after Charles left his wife on that trail. When Charles stopped his wife and signaled to her that he wanted to take one more picture up the trail, he had found a photographic opportunity of a lifetime. The warm spring weather that had drawn Charles and Glenda out of their house to Glacier National Park had also woken the grizzly bears in the park from their hibernation. And what Charles had seen up the trail was a mother grizzly bear and her 3 cubs. The first few photographs that Charles would take of these bears were shot from a good distance away, and it just showed the mother bear and her 3 babies just kind of sauntering around the rocks, not really paying any attention to Charles. To Charles, grizzly bears were the most majestic creatures in nature. He didn't just love them, he viewed them as if they were sort of magical in some way. He was always going to local town meetings to speak about grizzly bears' beauty, and we needed to defend their natural habitat. As such, anyone who knew Charles knew about his passion for grizzlies. And while of course Charles knew that grizzly bears were dangerous, he also thought that the bears, who were very smart and sensitive, could sense his own very gentle and protective feelings towards them, and so if he was around them, they would never perceive him as a threat. Charles had taken some very good photos of other bears, black bears, but he had never taken what he called the definitive grizzly bear photo. And it was going to be this definitive grizzly photo of the mother and her three cubs that would finally get him a spot in the Hungry Horse News publication. As Charles took more and more photos of these bears, you could see in the photos that Charles was getting closer and closer and closer to this mother bear and her cubs. It was obvious that he was tracking them, even as the mother bear and the cubs were clearly trying to walk away from him. Finally, when Charles got about 50 feet away from this family of grizzly bears, he must have kicked a rock or stepped on a twig that broke that startled the bears. And so the second to last photo that Charles would take of this family shows the mother bear very clearly turning around to look at Charles, and she's making perfect eye contact with him, as is one of her cubs. Charles would take one more photo. And in this photo, you can see the bears are not just staring at Charles, they are running towards him. They are charging him. And it was likely after taking this photo that Charles realized the danger he was in. At this point, Charles tried to make a run for it by running down the side of this mountain. He got down to that tree with the low-hanging limbs, and he attempted to climb up into it, maybe hoping he could get one more picture of this bear if they would just leave him alone. But the mother bear and her cubs, they came charging down. They saw him up in the tree, and the mother bear began climbing into the tree, and she reached Charles. Now, she likely weighed about 400 pounds, and when mother grizzly bears are defending their young, they are absolutely merciless. And so she must have grabbed him or bit onto him and yanked him from the tree. And Charles, somehow, after being pulled to the ground and getting slashed and bit by this bear, he managed to break away from her, as we can tell from the blood trail, and he made it about 50 feet away from this tree before the bear chased him down again, jumped on top of him, and killed him. When authorities figured out that Charles had managed to briefly get away from this mother grizzly bear and made it 50 feet away from her, they wondered why he hadn't pulled out his gun and shot at the bears to defend himself. But Charles's wife, Glenda, said it made perfect sense that Charles had not tried to harm this grizzly bear or her cubs. He loved grizzly bears, and he would never dream of leaving these three cubs without their mother. After Charles's death, the rangers did not attempt to track down this bear and her cubs and do anything to the bears, because they felt like the bears were just acting like bears, and it was Charles who was in the wrong. And Charles's family and friends would say that is a decision that Charles would definitely support. Charles's photos of the grizzly bear family were published in the Hungry Horse News alongside an article about his death.
Thank you for listening to the Mr. Ballin podcast. If you enjoyed today's stories and you're looking for more bone-chilling content, be sure to check out all of our studio's podcasts, Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries, Bedtime Stories, and Run Fool. Just search for Ballin Studios wherever you get your podcasts and you'll find them all. Also, there are hundreds more stories like the ones you heard today, but in video format on our YouTube channel, which is just called Mr. Ballin. So that's going to do it. I really appreciate your support. Until next time, see ya. Hey, Prime members, you can binge 8 new episodes of the Mr. Ballin podcast 1 month early and all episodes ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. And before you go, please tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Hey, listeners, it's me, Mr. Ballin. I appreciate you all being fans of The Strange, Dark, and Mysterious, but let's be honest, sometimes you need a bit of humor to go alongside true crime. That's where the Morbid Podcast comes in. It's a lighthearted nightmare over there. Hosted by Elena, an autopsy technician, and Ash, a hairstylist, at its core, Morbid is a true crime, creepy history, and all things spooky podcast. But when Ash and Elena get together and tell stories, they do so in a way that not only shows the depth and detail of their research, but each episode also includes a touch of humor, a dash of sarcasm, and is garnished with just a little bit of cursing. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Morbid early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.